This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Now, Deepavali is a time for families to gather and celebrate holiday traditions, but for some, celebrations can be tinged with a melancholy that cannot be assuaged by fireworks and festivities. In the run-up to the Festival of Lights, Ruvali Juan, Vinita Krishnasamy and Rajendran join me in the studio for a special edition of Live and Learn. Ruva, Vinita and Rajan, thank you all for being here today. So let's get started with what are some of your earliest memories of Deepavali? Maybe you can start, Vinita.
Thank you for having me. I think the earliest memory, I mean, if I can remember correctly, would be just eating good food. You know, Deepavali is a time when there's lots of food, lots of cookies. And in my family, there's something different we did was we had food from the day before. So, you know, the prayers, you have the prayers for the ancestors. So we had food continuously and then everyone kind of stayed awake and my mom would prepare food for the next day. So it's just, I think that was really interesting because, you know, it was one of those days you don't have to go to bed early and you just kind of, you know, stay up and hang out and chat and music would be playing. And then we'd play fireworks, which is something that we did, you know, yearly. So I think these are some of the things I can remember and, you know, and had a really good time.
Rufa, was it much the same for you?
Well, as a single child, for me, Deepavali was all about cousins coming back home. So I had five uncles. So I'll wait for them to balik kampung. For me, balik kampung was the most important part of the Deepavali because I was with my grandmother who's the hosting house for Deepavali.
Her house is Deepavali Central.
Yes, Central. So it was that part where my cousins coming back home, then we would go into a corner, chit-chat till late night. Like she said, we don't have to sleep early, musics are on, so much food to eat and firecrackers. Yeah.
What was Deepavali like for you growing up, Rajan?
It started almost like, say, about 3 weeks prior to the Deepavali celebration itself because not so much the festival, but my grandmother was such a stickler for traditions. So all the palagaram, the cakes, has to be handmade.
Wow.
So she will soak kilos and kilos of rice. And we, the young ones, were expected to pound it all and turn it into flour for her to make cakes. So whenever I go back home, I see all those, you know, the lesong and the batu giling and everything. It always brings back memories of how my grandmother just stood there and glared at us that the rice is just not fine enough. Pound it harder.
See, handmade artisan flour
all the way back then.
You know,
we're still doing it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're still doing it. Yes.
In your home, who was most excited about Deepavali?
The children, as usual, you know, that's expected. You know, of course, the adults are all there running around doing stuff and baking and cooking and frying and cleaning. But we children, we help. But it's also the excitement of like, hey, this particular day is like, you know, it's coming. It's going to be like food and friends and new clothes going to the temple. And then, of course, like, what Vanita said, eating. Eat and eat.
In your house then, Ruba, what were some of the must-have Deepavali foods?
We are orang Perak. So dodol was wajib. So
dodol.
We make dodol out of scratch.
Wow.
We will, you know, make dodol for about 12 to 13 hours. It's tiring, but it creates so much of excitement. We know that Deepavali has come. It's dodol time. You know, that's the one time that we make dodol. And of course, muruku from scratch, hand pound rice. Yeah.
That. For me, it was very much the idea of my appa's mutton curry, served at, you know, 8:30 in the morning with pillowy idlis.
Nice.
And the only time of year that, you know, you can legitimately eat mutton curry that
early in the morning. Yeah.
What were some other favorite Deepavali foods?
I just realized my grandmother used to make this nyonya achar.
Wow.
Have you all heard of this? It's green chili stuffed with grated papayas.
No.
It's a Peranakan thing. I'm Indian. I don't know how my grandma.
How Malaysian
but
is that?
That used to be there. She made this huge pot of it, you know, and with all the mutton and the chicken and the vegetarian meals even, you'll always have this Peranakan nyonya chili achar. My grandmother used to make that every year. It's just suddenly I remember that.
Vanita, you have a Peranakan connection as well. People in your house make jam tarts.
Jam tarts. My mom used to make the suji cake. So, you know, a lot of those things. I think it's basically we celebrated something that's very Malaysian.
Yes.
You know, there's a mixed match of food there. Yeah, we still had the muruku and the chimuruku and the neyurundes, you know, which is the ghee balls. But I think also on top of that, the savouries, you know.
Was there anything, because you come from a Sri Lankan Tamil heritage, anything in particular that was in terms of that unique foods?
Oh gosh, the morning where we have the sodi, you know, with our thosais and our idlis and our spring hoppers, you know. Yeah. It was just amazing. That was it. I think that and my grandmother's mutton paratho.
It's amazing to think how the celebration, the food that we feast on becomes so Malaysian. It's not Indian.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's so Malaysian. In my husband's family, my mum-in-law makes, I think, the best wajik in town, which is an integral part of the Deepavali celebrations. Were there any rituals, Deepavali rituals, that were an absolute must-do in your home, Vanita?
The night before, when we did the prayers for the ancestors, which is the pariyal, right? We do the offerings and the prayers. That was something that we did year after year. So every year when my mom was around, we used to go to my dad's place, which is my grandfather's place on my dad's side, and then we go to my mom's, you know, family side. So it was just something we did year after year. Then thereafter, of course, come back home and start preparing for the next day.
I've actually particularly really loved this aspect of Deepavali. You know, in many cultures, you know, talking about the death and the dead is perhaps taboo, but Deepavali opens with this ritual, this prayers and remembering your ancestors. Was this something that you did as well in your home, Ruba?
Yes. It's something that we really look out for, because I remember, you know, cleaning up all the old frames of my great-grandmother, great-great-grandfather. I'm the fifth generation in Malaysia. Mm. And these are the people that I have actually traveled all the way from India to Malaysia and to build a home. My rumah kampung is 150 years old.
Mm. Wow.
It's still standing there, and my grandmother is still there. So that prayer, I mean, the ancestral prayer, is very special and very emotional. And there was this shift that I noticed. When I was a kid, the padil used to be non-vegetarian. I remember this, right? So they will offer, I think it's very Malaysian and very Asian, East Asian, where they will put the charut, they'll put some alcohol. These are offerings to the one who have passed away.
Yes.
But later on, as my uncles and aunties go, you know, grown up, they have known some things. So they said, okay, you know what? Let's switch up to being vegetarian. So then the servings and the offerings has changed to be vegetarian.
Mm. Rajan, in your house?
It was the pareil thing as well, and as what Ruba said, you know, every living creature would be served up on the table. But again, interesting shift. Maybe about 10, 12 years ago, we started realizing that, you know, actually Diwali Day is celebrated on Amavasya Day, which is the new moon. Mm-hmm. So we become vegetarian on Diwali Day. Mm-hmm. So to all my friends who actually come expecting mutton curry and chicken curry and whatnot, it's like, oops, sorry, come one day later. Today the whole family is fasting. And they swear it's just my way of not cooking up a mutton dish curry for them, you know. But it's that shift that suddenly you start realizing that there are, like, you know, some religious aspects to it as well. And that, you know, Amavasya is also in honor of ancestors. Yes. Mm. Therefore, you know, to observe a vegetarian meal is also a good thing. But you come up with creative ways with vegetarian food. Yeah. The best vegetable biryani is there now.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been talking a lot about kind of the rituals that are associated with Deepavali. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the nostalgia that we associate with Deepavali. I'm speaking to Ruba Lijuan, Vanita Krishnasamy, and Rajendran about the nostalgia associated with Deepavali of years gone by. I'm going to take a short break. We will be back. You're listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Salvaraj. This is a special Deepavali edition of Live and Learn, where I'm speaking to Ruba Lijuan, Vanita Krishnasamy, and Rajendran about the memories of Deepavalis in the years gone by. Just before the break, we were chatting about the ancestral prayers, the prayers made to ancestors on the eve of Deepavali.
Did you all have that thing, right? After all the prayers are done, my grandfather used to do it, no? He said, okay, now everybody leave because the ancestors are coming to eat.
Yes,
he was just like opening the window to see.
Yes.
And then finally you'll come and say, okay, they've eaten, now you all can come. And what my grandpa did, he will mix it all up.
Yeah.
And everybody gets
one
a ball.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So you must eat that.
Yes.
Yeah. What you mentioned just now, Ruva, about, you know, helping your grandmother or cleaning the photographs, right? That was my role when I was celebrating Deepavali, when my grandmother was still alive. I'm first generation. My father was born in India. And so my grandmother's memories of Deepavali in India were, of course, very, very different. As a migrant when she came mm-hmm. here, it was a completely different experience for her. I think that's what I miss most about Deepavali. I miss the fact that I could sit down next to her. She would tell me stories of connections of people that, you know, I had never met in my life and I would never ever meet, but I felt like they
you
were
You know them.
Family. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Year on year, their characters grew.
Yeah.
The story behind them grew. And you finally started having a picture of what it must have been like
yes.
to have Deepavali. Because you don't really think of your grandparents as young boys and girls.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, true.
But they did have that at one point in your life, right? So what do you miss most about the Deepavali celebrations of your childhood?
What do I miss most about? I think just being that child and just waiting for Deepavali and the new clothes and food and firecrackers, those things I miss. And just having, like you said, your cousins over, you know, the whole family together. And I miss having my grandparents, especially my grandmother, you know, who used to be such a force, you know. She kept the family together, she cooked, and she just enjoyed actually taking care of all of us. And that was an amazing thing. I remember, you know, I mean, I have loads of different memories, but, you know, year after year, that was really something I looked forward to.
Ruva, what about you? What do you miss most about the Deepavalis of your childhood?
My grandfather. I grew up with my grandparents, so my grandfather and grandmother is the pillar for our whole family. So it has been 10 years now since he has passed. So I miss him dearly. You know, he's the one who will wake up early, prepare everything, all the decorations. The ang pao comes from him, the blessing early in the morning. I just miss that feeling a lot. So I have my grandmother with us still. We treasure her so dearly.
I remember the first Deepavali after my grandmother passed some years ago. Just the idea of celebrating Deepavali sounded abhorrent. It was just simply not possible because that to not have that familiarity around was devastating. But for the three of you, how did you face, and I know that all of you have suffered personal losses, how do you celebrate or how do you face the festivities in the year or in the years after the loss of a loved one, Rajan?
This is going to be my year of reckoning, so to speak, because I lost an aunt who I was very, very close, and she and I were like, you know, they're like, you know, partners in crime, because Diwali shopping, we're going to do it for the family and everything, and she's the one who'll be messing around the house, decorating and everything, and I will tag along. So she passed away early this year. So this weekend is going to be a bit difficult for me because suddenly that one person who made a big fuss about Deepavali in our family is not going to be there. So it's going to be interesting for me because my grandparents too passed away about 30 years ago. So you sort of get used to it. First 2 years, you sort of feel bad. But you know, as you grow, you sort of like handle it. But suddenly this person who's been so, so integral to the celebration, and she's the one who wants all the cousins and the relatives and everyone to be there, she's not going to be there.
I'll be missing my mom as usual. I mean, she passed on about 2 years ago. And since then, it's been a little bit difficult. The first year was really difficult because she passed 2 months, just 2 months before Deepavali. And that was just, you know, it was just one of those bad, bad years. But I've learned to kind of tell myself year after year, although it's not the same, I want to just keep the tradition going because I've got kids and I want them to understand and be proud and enjoy the fact that, you know, Deepavali is a day that you celebrate, you know, we come together, we do the things that, you know, makes us happy. So I think that's something I want to keep going. So that is, I think having that in mind, I just kind of forge ahead because, you know, my grandmother was big at celebrating and then she passed on and that put a damper. Then my mom took over and she kept the family together. Like, you know, the one, like you said, Rajan, you know, bringing everyone together, fussing over everything, the food and what are you going to wear? And, you know, colors of your sari and this and that. And then now that she's gone, you know, and then I can see how everyone is kind of doing their own thing. So I think the best thing I could do right now is my immediate family and teach my kids that, you know, This is how we celebrate, and this is what you got to do, you know, thereafter, you know. I think just kind of keep the tradition going.
Mm. Ruva, what about for you?
I think I'm in this transition period where I'm watching how my grandmother slowed down so much after my grandfather, you know, have passed on. And looking at my mother as the eldest sister of the family, where my uncles have their own stuff to do, their kids have grown up, studying abroad. I'm looking at that transition now, where everything is slowly breaking down. It's just not so much on the happy side, but I think this is the reality.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, this is a transition that somehow one day will happen.
But without this, and in all of your families, you have this linchpin, this one person who holds the celebrations together. When they are no longer there, what does that mean for Deepavali celebrations? Does it evolve or does it take on a different form, or is it just never the same again? Rajan?
I don't think it can never be the same again. You will feel that loss. You will feel certain traditions having been sort of like lost, you know, in the course of time and everything. But the beauty of it is that you also now come up with newer traditions or you try to maintain some of the traditions that you remember. Like I have two very close aunts who I still have, and I've got my brother, I've got his family. So it's like, again, picking up the phone and say, you better be back. You know, you don't you dare not turn up for this Diwali. And then already planning things and everything. It does give you the opportunity to build these traditions. You know, you start creating your new set of traditions, you know, and you fall back on what your grandma, your parents, your ancestors have done, you know. And like, you know, like suddenly I just realized after chatting this now, you know, I should go and look up for my grandma's recipe for that achar, because suddenly that is like such an integral part of that. I don't want to let that go because that just reminds me back that that tradition is still there. It's just a matter of fact that I have to reach out and relive it now. You know? So there will be changes, there will be differences, but new things can also be built from it.
Manitha, what traditions do you hope to kind of, do you think that you can successfully continue?
I don't think I can successfully continue everything, but I think, like Rajan just said, you know, sometimes we just kind of remember the traditions that, you know, maybe our grandmothers and mothers have, you know, kind of taken, you know, each Deepavali through, and also create new ones. Like, you know, like I said, I'm trying really hard to make sure that my kids are, you know, they understand what Deepavali is and they understand the tradition and they understand basically just being proud of your heritage and understanding that Deepavali is a day of coming together. So that I keep, you know, very close, and that I keep doing year after year since my mom has passed. Sometimes some things I'm not as good as my mom, I suppose. I don't know how to bake and cook and make the right things, but I try. You know, you can't bake, you just buy line. like you said, it just evolves. But still keeping intact, you know, your basic traditions that you've actually kind of taken on from, you know, generation to generation. Mm. So I think that's important.
Ruva, have your family added on any new traditions over the years?
New traditions? Not really.
Other than the delicious dodol.
Below my dear. But what I try to do on my part is I photograph. In a way, I want to document whatever that's there. Mm. Now we have videos, audios, so I'll make sure I record things. I want to show how muruku has been made all these years. And on my part, like Vanita said, I don't think I can carry on whatever my grandmother has done so far. Mm. But I can definitely follow through and bring on her values. Beautiful values that I can pass on to the coming generation.
Yeah.
Mm. So let's then look a little bit about, you know, it means so much to us, right? For those of us who have grown up here in Malaysia with Deepavali, it's such a important part of our culture. And yet I still feel that by and large in Malaysia, Deepavali is still seen as a tokenistic celebration outside of the Indian community. Yep. Yeah. You know, you've seen this, you know, year on year, they pull out the peacocks and the kolams for shopping malls. Is that all that we've become reduced to?
The question I keep asking constantly, you know, yep. One more column, and I'm done.
Lose it, you know?
Yeah, because it's year after year, it's the same thing. There's a lot more to, you know, Deepavali than just drawing colourful columns, you know.
What would you like to see differently done for Deepavali from a Malaysian context?
The fact that, like, I mean, us being the third largest community in the country, you know, and for a certain extent, the Sabah Sarawakians also save the same problem, I think. Mm-hmm. We don't appreciate, we do not talk about these cultures enough, even though there's so much happening day in, day out. You know, we eat Indian food, we eat Chinese food. There's, you know, that kind of cross-cultural thing happening. We deal with people who are not our own race on a daily basis, you know. And yet, certain things like this come, as you say, you only start seeing some rice thrown, some coloured rice thrown on the floor. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's this one mall which I shall not even mention. There's just a column there on the floor with no explanation, nothing whatsoever. So you're wondering, like, I mean, that's like the worst in tokenism you can do. Someone gave him 2 kilos of rice and said, go design a floor drawing. So you don't see that. You want that a little bit more because you learn about each other's cultures. You appreciate each other's cultures. Mm. And as much as, you know, we say malls are bad, people do go there. You know, that's where a lot of interactions happen. So if you can actually talk about each other's cultures, you have that communication happening. Your children taking pictures. Surely the kids would ask dad, mom, what is that on the floor? Mm. This is something that Indians do, and it is just not a floor drawing. There's some more significance to it. You're teaching people about it. Similarly, you know, we'd never see Sabah Sarawakian, a Kamatan or a Gawai being celebrated in West Malaysia. And that annoys me, you know, to no end, because I've got a lot of Sabahan and Sarawakian friends. Mm. And it's the same thing. The same thing the Sabahan and Sarawakians feel when they're in Peninsular Malaysia. I suppose we Indians, we feel that way too, you know. And when you see a beautiful mall deco or a proper street decorated nicely, and then you go like, wow, at least that person has taken the trouble. You appreciate the person's business. Mm. But I suppose it all boils down to economics and, you know, finance and whatnot. Say they don't feel that Indians are strong enough with the buying power so that, you know, it doesn't really need to celebrate it, that kind of thing. You
know? Something that I know that you and I will agree on, Ruva, is the fact that Deepavali is a time where a lot more people suddenly get interested in saris. Everybody who wants to wear a sari. And I'm actually fine with the idea. I think it's absolutely... Yeah. I don't see wearing a sari as cultural appropriation in
I really
feel that a sari is for anybody and anybody.
I think it's the only attire that can cater for anybody's size.
Yes. And any gender as well. Yep. It is a gender fluid garment.
Correct. Just stitched material.
Yeah. Right? Yep. Do you get a lot of requests around about this time to do draping classes?
Yes. Interestingly, maybe a few days before, people will actually buzz me to ask, Ruva, is there a sari that I can just put on and I'm done? You know?
That sounds like me.
I know. I mean, I like and I appreciate that they have this interest to drape a sari, but then it's very sad that people only go for it only during Deepavali, just to show, hey, I'm part of Deepavali because I'm wearing a sari. But I think it would be much better if, like Rajan said, if people knew what does sari mean, what's the significance, and how versatile it is.
7 million ways of tying it.
You know? Yes.
Which comes back.
There is no right way.
Yeah, there's no right way. There is no wrong way.
It's a drape. It's a drape that you can just, you know, swaddle yourself with. But, you know, you make an interesting point, which comes back to this whole idea of, are we really invested in the significance of each other's cultures rather than just the idea of participating in the culture? You know, we see it with minor festivals all the time, right? Do people know the significance of a kolam, for example? Do people know the significance of a lamp? How do we have those conversations beyond the run-up to Deepavali then?
Well, it has to start from schools.
Yeah.
One of the first places that, you know, I think in the past, we always had our textbooks with Ali, Ahmad and Mutu. Ali, Achong and Mutu, you know. But I think nowadays you don't really see Mutu appearing very much. It's Ali, Ahmad and John maybe now, you know. So it's modernizing in that way where that the Indians are beginning to sort of fall out kind of thing, you know. When you have that, in those textbooks, you know, like your, what do you call this, you know, civics books and whatnot, you'll have stories of people going to Mutu's house or Deepavali and, you know, and having a food, having their meal there and stuff like that. You start early. So children also are sort of like, you know, introduced to this idea that, you know, oh, there is something that you can do. For example, Sumitra, my grandfather, because my kampung is actually a Malay kampung where I grew up, we had goats And my grandfather used to slaughter goat. Mm-hmm. But knowing that because we live in a Malay kampung and a lot of our guests would be Malays, my grandfather always brought in a Malay man to slaughter the goat.
So that was
because
halal.
Because everybody halal. Could eat it.
Yes. Right.
And the morning of Diwali, all these trays will go out to the Malay family. Hari Raya, we know that tray will come back.
Right.
You know? But that kind of thing, you know, because you were more trusting of each other.
Yes.
Mm. You bought into another person's culture, not for the fact that it's Raya or Diwali. It's because it's a celebration. You want to be part of that kind
and
of thing.
And not for the fear that it was going to influence you in
exactly.
any way, shape or form either.
Correct, yes. Yeah. That, now it's yes. taking on a different,
yeah,
you know,
whole different
unfounded
thing.
Fear altogether.
Because
know?
Why shouldn't other cultures enrich our lives
exactly.
rather than
exactly.
drain aspects? From
yes.
it.
Correct. And
yes.
culture is something we borrow and beg and steal and whatnot from each other. It's been going on for millennia. So why should we suddenly stop and say, this is only mine, you don't partake?
Sure. But I think also more so, it has to start at home. We got to make sure that our next generation or the children around us are, you know,
exposed.
Understand,
yeah.
are exposed and are enriched with the knowledge, you know, of exactly why we are doing the things that we do during the celebration. So I think then it goes to the next level of whether you're the next race or, you know, a different from a different, you know, society or whatever. So I think really it's important for all parents to make sure that they understand it before they even, you know, impart it to their children.
True. Hence the dodols and the Peranakan achas.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
The amalgamation of cultures.
Just so un-Indian about
yeah.
it.
And Sumitra, I also think that nowadays the younger generations are so, you know, indulged in all these gadgets, internet. So I think social media plays a huge role in educating this young generation. So I seriously think advertisements, whichever way you say it, these people should come up with better, you know, message in all their Deepavali greetings and
stuff. Yes, because it's not about lighting lamps
exactly,
and drawing
not just
columns.
The columns, not only the Bharatanatyam dancers,
I mean,
beyond
think
that.
Yasmin Ahmad's beautiful Petronas
yes.
Deepavali
yes.
ads. I mean, gosh, I miss those ads. I mean, even the simple thing of, you know, that oil bath you have in the morning, those things, I remember those things, you know. Just so significant to the celebration. Just little things like that, you know.
Interestingly, this year, again, no mention of the product, there was this one very nice ad which looked as if it's very stereotypical, but the fact that they used an Indian girl who was not super
typical.
Fair.
Yes.
I was blown away by that. That is what, you know, it's like, so what if she's dark?
Mm.
She's an Indian person. She's proud at the fact that that particular company decided to use her. I thought that was brilliant.
Things are changing slowly.
Yes, slowly.
We are willing, or maybe we are trying to claw away from the rigors of stereotypes, right? We are not just one people, one color. We're not homogenous. To be Indian and to celebrate Deepavali is so multifaceted, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which then leads me to my final question. How will you be marking Deepavali this year? I know it's going to be a quiet one for you, Rajan.
Oh, I'll make some noise.
You'll find some way to make
exactly,
some noise.
Exactly. You know, you cannot. You know, yes, I'm going to feel down, but
yeah.
I know my aunt wouldn't want that. Because she was that person,
yeah.
you know? So there will be that you know, fussing around and trying to get some things done, and you've got relatives coming and telling me you shouldn't be celebrating because there was a demise in your house, and me fighting and saying, no, that's not what she would have wanted. You move on, you move on.
Yeah.
Vanitha, what's it going to be like this
year?
Well,
this year will be the usual palil, the night before, because my husband's parents are also have passed on, and then for my mom. So we'll do that the night before, and then we decided to take a little holiday, the family.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
So we're just going just for a quick trip away to some nice Malaysian resort, and we'll probably have a good time.
That's a new tradition.
That's a new tradition. And you know what? I've actually got all my murukus and everything, and I'm going to just take it up there, and we're going to go and we're going to eat.
Can we come along?
Yeah, maybe. Yes, why not?
Muruku at a beach resort.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Ruva, what's Deepavali this year looking like?
Well, like I said before, I am going to celebrate for my Patima, who's still there, and also for my cousins who are there, hoping and looking forward excitedly for Deepavali. So it is about, like Rajan said, moving on, new hopes, and just looking forward.
Enjoying it.
Enjoying it.
And on that note, all that remains to be said is Elorgum Iniya Deepavali Nalvaathukal.
Iniya Deepavali Nalvaathukal.
Yes.
I've been speaking to Ruvali Juan, Vanitha Krishnasamy and Rajendran about the nostalgia and longing that sometimes creeps into our festive celebrations and how we continue to find love and light in our lives. If you have missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.